so. All these secrets being entrusted to her should have made her feel honored. But instead, she was unsettled. There was so much she still didn't know. After running through standard checks to ensure that her peacemaker was not being tracked or followed at a distance, being alone was more than habit, she turned to the flat screen once again. So let's see what all the masters wanted me to know. She lifted a keyboard onto her lap, tapped in some commands, and started to view the information that had been loaded into the ship's computer. Lannery and Dale's parents told them that the ritual of visiting each temple would be best done under their own steam as much as possible. Not for them the ease of a speeder or the comfort of a shire, one of the most common beasts of burden on Typhon. Walking, their parents said, will bring them closer to Typhon, which itself is incredibly rich in the Force. It will make them understand, experience, taste, and smell their surroundings, instead of viewing them through a speeder's windshield or from the high back of a shire. And sometimes it means there will be dangers to confront. Dreadful dangers. 40 days and 2,400 kilometers from home, on the strange continent of Thyre, they reached the expansive Stark forests that lead eventually to the Silent Desert. The trees of these forests store water in pendulous, leathery sacks, useful to travelers and constantly refilled as the skeletal branches suck what moisture they can from the air. It is here that their lives are threatened for the first time. Tythos shines down on them, the weather neither too hot nor too cold. The going through the forest is gentle, and they are following a shallow stream that meanders lazily toward the desert some kilometers ahead.
"I'll harvest ground apples for dinner," Dale says.
"I'll catch a rumbat to cook," Lannery says.
And then a flight of hookhawks swoops out of the high trees and attempts to hypnotize Dale and Lannery with their sweet song. Carnivores. These birds hunt in packs, singing their prey to a somnolent standstill and then tearing into eyeballs and throats with their wickedly hooked beaks and sharp talons. They hover in a rough circle around the brother and sister, wings beating a gentle rhythm, voice glands whistling and humming in practiced harmony. Their eyes are dark and intelligent. Their claws shine. Lannery has heard about these creatures but has never seen them before. She is terrified. Never has she faced such danger, and the knowledge that their lives are at risk strikes a heavy blow. And yet a thrill rushes through her as she thinks, this is what the great journey is all about. Quick, she says, down to the stream.
What good will that do?
Dale asks. She realizes that he is also afraid, and she feels a rush of protectiveness. The splashing of water can sometimes smother their song.
Really?
Don't you listen in any of our lessons?
She grabs Dale's hand and tugs, but already his eyes have taken on a hazy sheen, the corners of his mouth lifting in a lazy smile.
Dale!
I'm fine.
A single hookhawk drifts down, slow and casual, still singing as it aims its claws for Dale's eyes. Lannery punches wildly, and in her panic she feels the Force flailing within her. It is against everything she has learned, but she does not have time to berate herself. Her fist ruffles feathers, and she feels the cool kiss of the hawk's claws across her knuckles. It screeches in anger as it flaps back, and in that moment she manages to calm, focus, and flow with the Force. When the bird swoops down once more and turns its beak toward her eyes, Lannery reaches out and Force slaps it aside. This time her hand hardly touches the creature, barely a kiss of feathers across her fingertips. But the impact is much greater. Bones crackle, and with a single weak cry, its body disappears into some undergrowth, leaving only a few feathers dancing on the air.
Come on,
she says, dragging Dale with her. The hookhawks are still singing, and their voices silence the rest of the forest. A cool cascade, a pleasing symphony. And though Lannery tries to close herself to their influence, she can feel a distance growing around her. She is dragging Dale along, and when he trips and falls,
His hand is jerked from hers. She turns back, and her brother is lying on his back, smiling up at the stark forest's canopy. They will never reach the stream in time. The hook hawks are coming close. This is all on her. Lannery feels like screaming in fury and fear, but instead she finds serenity and balance. She draws her consciousness inward and crouches, breathing deeply. Perhaps the hook hawks see this as her succumbing to their charms, but they could not be more wrong. As the first of the birds swoop, Lannery stands and sends an air-splitting force punch their way. Two creatures are knocked from the sky with broken wings and ruptured innards, and a third is smashed into a tree trunk in an explosion of feathers. The surviving birds change their song to one of panic and fly up through the canopy and away. Lannery smiles at Dale, who is still shaking with fear. His eyes are distant.
"But they were so,"
he says. "Beautiful? A trick. They'd find beauty in your flowing blood and open flesh." Pleased that she has protected them, yet wary of pride, Lannery helps Dale stand.
"Your hand," he says.
"It is bleeding." He tends his sister's wound silently, dripping in medicines from his rucksack that will clean the talon cuts. Then he wraps her hand in a bandage. All the while, Lannery listens for a return of the hook hawks, and a small part of her wants them to come back. Her heart is beating fast, and she delights in her success. But the birds have finished hunting for the day. Dale leads the way through the diminishing forest, and as dusk starts to fall, they see the sparse desert landscape visible on the horizon. The edge of the forest leads down a gentle hillside, and the boundary between forest and desert is a gradual lessening of undergrowth, a greater spread of creeping sand. They pause for a while, filling their water canteens. And as they move out into the desert, they are cocooned within a deep, encompassing silence. Lannery speaks her own name, and feels it only as a vibration in her chest and jaw. It is as if the desert does not wish to hear. She looks at Dale, and he is wide-eyed and afraid, and Lannery thinks, "I have already saved him once." Pride swells once again. She tries to push it down, because pride is distracting.